Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada Ki. Brahma was stunned because of transcendental bliss, muhyanti yat surya. In this astonishment, all his senses were stunned, and he was unable to say or do anything. Brahma had considered himself absolute, thinking himself the only powerful deity. But now, his pride was subdued, and he again became merely one of the demigods. An important demigod, of course, but a demigod nonetheless. Brahma, therefore, cannot be compared to God, Krishna, or Narayana. It is forbidden to compare Narayan even to demigods like Brahma and Shiva. What to speak of others? One who considers demigods like Brahma and Shiva to be on an equal level with Narayan must certainly be considered an offender. We should not equate the demigods with Narayan, for even Sankaracharya has forbidden this, Narayana paro vyaktat. Also, as mentioned in the Vedas, eko Narayana asinna Brahma nishenaha. In the beginning of creation, there was only the Supreme Personality, Narayana, and there was no existence of Brahma or Shiva. Therefore, one who at the end of his life remembers Narayana attains the perfection of life. Ante Narayana Smriti. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Karamahyam Dadhati Swaparantikam Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prashtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Viranta Swamini Tinamine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatharine Vanchakalpa Trubhyasha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadara Srivasari Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Then, by the power of the effulgence of those Vishnumurtis, Lord Brahma, his 11 senses jolted by astonishment and stunned by transcendental bliss, became silent. Just like a child's clay, dull in the presence of a village deity. So we have a really beautiful pastime here of Lord Brahma as he tries to impress Krishna with his mystic powers. I actually wanted to say something about Haridas Thakur as well. And it just so happens that today is also Haridas Thakur's disappearance day. I didn't know until this morning. The title of what I wanted to talk to you about today is being honest with ourselves. And the first thing I have to say, being honest, is that I feel really unqualified to be here in front of all of you. But I will try to share some things that I have learned from my seniors. I wanted to start off by reading a little section of the chapter, the 13th chapter of the Krishna book. Srila Prabhupada begins this chapter by saying, "It is said that it is the nature of a devotee to constantly apply his mind, energy, words, ears, etc., in hearing and chanting about Krishna. This is called Krishna consciousness. And for one who is wrapped in hearing and chanting about Krishna, the subject matter never becomes hackened or old. That is the significance of transcendental subject matter in contrast to material matter. Material subject matter becomes stale. One cannot hear a certain subject for a long time. He wants change. But as far as transcendental subject matter is concerned, it is called Nitya Nava Navayamana. This means that one can go on chanting and hearing about the Lord and never feel tired, but remain fresh and eager to hear more and more. So I think that that really establishes the mood for reading Krishna's pastimes here in the Srimad Bhagavatam. It's very difficult to understand Krishna. What to speak of for us, the greatest living entity in this universe, Lord Brahma, the first living entity born from Vishnu himself. When he came to Vrindavan and he saw Krishna playing with the cowherd boys and the calves, and he had some say it was some sort of a chutney. The Krishna book says it was yogurt and rice. He had it in his left hand, and he would eat some, and then he'd extend his arm out and say, look what my mom prepared. Look what Mother Yashoda prepared. Have some like that. And then the cowherd boys would eat from his hands. And then another cowherd boy would have something prepared from his mother, and he would say, he would eat half of it, and then say, Krishna, look, taste this. This is what my mother has cooked. And we can see those loving relationships between Krishna and his devotees. And as would be imagined, Brahma is very astonished. Can you imagine if Gadadhar Prabhu walks into the altar now, and you're eating half of the plate from the altar and then giving the other half to Radha Gokulananda? That might be your last day in the Pujari Seva. So like that, Brahma was very astonished. He had studied the Vedic literatures. He had done austerity, meditation, but still he could not understand this loving relationship between Krishna and his devotees. So he decided, we all know the story, he decided to just take the cowherd boys and calves away for one moment, which in the human years is 1 year. So there's many lessons that can be learned from this pastime. But before I go into them, I wanted to share with you something that I learned from Dina Bandhu Prabhu during the Braj Mandal Parikram. He was saying that of the two pastimes, Brahma stealing the cowherd boys and Indra flooding Vrindavan, Krishna preferred Indra's mistake more, because it was an opportunity for all the devotees to come together and be with Krishna. Not everyone could see Krishna 24 hours a day. You know, the cowherd boys would have the morning, the gopis would have the evening, like that. So this was a chance for everyone to be together. But in this scenario, Krishna was not able to be with his devotees for a whole year. So you can imagine how upset he was. And even though he was very upset, he was still very kind to Brahma. It's said that after the whole pastime, when Brahma came back, he really wanted to apologize to Krishna, and Krishna would not even look at him. So Brahma became a fish. He noticed Krishna's activities, and there was a little pond where Krishna and the cowherd boys would wash their hands after eating. So Brahma thought, let me become a fish and see if I can talk to Krishna that way. So he became a fish. He was swimming there, and all the cowherd boys were washing their hands in that pond. And as soon as Krishna came and he saw that Brahma was in the form of that fish, he went to a different lake to wash his hands. So what Brahma did is he had some remnants of prasadam from the devotees, and that was what gained him an audience with Krishna. That was the purification that he received. And that, of course, he recited the Brahma Samhita, really important prayers to guide us in spiritual life. Another wonderful thing that happened through this pastime is that you know, the gopis, the elder gopis, and the cows had great affection for their sons and daughters, but they always had that much more affection for Krishna. They would always drop everything they were doing to go and serve Krishna. But this time around, they didn't understand why, but they had the same amount of affection for their children as they did for Krishna. And it was because Krishna took the form of all the cowherd boys and calves. Dinabandhu Prabhu was also telling us that it was around that time that the gopis, the young gopis, were ready to get married. So actually, they all got to marry Krishna. They all, Radharani, when she married Abhimanyu, Abhimanyu was actually taken away by Brahma, and so she actually married Krishna. So you could say, oh, why is Krishna doing all these activities? But he was actually married to all the gopis and like that. Now to the main part of what I wanted to speak about, being honest with ourselves in Krishna consciousness. I was remembering a seminar that Kripa Moya Puru gave a few months ago. He was saying that after practicing Krishna consciousness for 40, 50 years, every so often, every couple of years, you really have to recommit yourself. Why am I chanting Hare Krishna? Why am I waking up early every morning? Why am I doing these activities? Do I genuinely believe in Krishna? Does Krishna exist? These are the questions that we have to ask ourselves. And if we do believe that Krishna exists, then why do we act the way we do? It love is shown through action, not just through words. We can't just say, oh, I love Krishna. But how's that shown through our actions? So here's a question that I was told yesterday. So just to make this a bit more interactive, can I have a raise of hands if you're completely happy with your situation right now? Are you perfectly happy with your situation now? Jai, leave over. So I was told that this is a deep level of understanding. But as one advances in Krishna consciousness, one realizes, as Brahma said in the Brahma Samhita, Ishvara Parama Krishna, that nothing happens without the will of Krishna. Krishna has put me in this situation for a reason. It may be to learn, or it may be to show an example to others. Yesterday we had a little sangha, and we were talking about Haridas Thakur. And one of the topics that came up is, why do great devotees sometimes take birth in low families? And we see practically in Krishna consciousness, many great devotees that have come to assist Srila Prabhupada's movement, you know, were born in the West, maybe not the best family conditions. But the reason why is because if all the devotees were born in a great family, and if everything was easy for them, then we would say, okay, that's their situation. That doesn't apply to me. My circumstances are different. There's no way that I can become Krishna conscious. But we see that Krishna sometimes puts his dear devotees through difficult situations to teach his other devotees. So we see the Pandavas, the amount of suffering that they went to. And the idea is that no one can say that they've suffered more than the Pandavas. You know, who has been tried, who has tried to kill you more than 20 times? has tried to burn your house, steal all your possessions, your wife, stolen everything. And still the Pandavas were very sincere, very surrendered. So Lord Brahma realized that in this situation, as the greatest living entity, perhaps I have become very proud. Perhaps it is not the best situation for me to understand Krishna consciousness. And that is why when he took birth as Srila Haridas Thakur, he decided, let me take birth in the lowest possible family at the time. It was a Mohammedan family, a family of dog eaters. This family was considered so lowborn that he was not even allowed to enter the Jagannath Puri temple. For those of us that can't enter the temple as well, then at least we can be happy that Haridas Thakur never went in the temple as well. But the interesting thing is that although Haridas Thakur never went inside the Puri temple to see Jagannath, Lord Jagannath in the form of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would come to see him every day. And that's why sometimes we say, don't come to the temple to see Krishna, but come to the temple and act in such a way that Krishna will glance at you. And that is the perfection. So back to this point of having complete faith in Krishna. I found that personally, you could say I've been practicing Krishna consciousness for 23 years, and there's definitely many things in my life that I would say are miracles. How did that happen? How did I get out of that situation? It must be Krishna. It must be Krishna's hand. But at the same time, in times of difficulty, when the mind is disturbed, then doubts start to arise. Oh, is Krishna really there? Why isn't Krishna helping me in this situation? What we don't realize is that Krishna is helping us. He's helping us not by trying to get us out of the situation, but he actually is helping us by putting us in that situation so that we have an opportunity to learn and develop ourselves. So how can we increase our faith in Krishna? Rupa Goswami in the Nectar of Devotion explains the 9 stages of bhakti. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur goes on further to explain that these steps, these 9 steps, from Shraddha to Prema, they're actually steps of faith. So we begin with a little spark. It's usually from a devotee. We somehow hear the devotees, we see them, and by that little spark, a little faith comes in. We decide, okay, maybe the Krishna consciousness movement isn't so crazy after all. Let me see what this is all about. Then we start to associate more with devotees. And as we associate more with devotees, our faith increases. Then as we start chanting, as we start doing devotional activities, our faith increases even more. Once we're practicing Krishna consciousness, once we're chanting Cheto Darpanam Arjanam, the heart begins to clean, and our faith increases even more. Then we come to a level of nishta, of being fixed. And of course, these levels aren't black and white. It's not like you reach nishta and now you're completely fixed and you don't have any taste, but then the next level is taste. It doesn't really work like that. It's all a gradual development. So prema is the highest expression of faith the highest expression of sadhu sangha, the highest expression of devotional service. When we go through these levels, we don't leave the other levels behind, but we increase them. So I remember one time Bhaktivedya Purnamaraj was saying that nishta is a level. You can experience some nishta when your alarm clock rings in the morning and you don't turn it off. When you just hear the alarm clock, or you don't even have to hear the alarm clock, but you're just ready to get up for Mangalarti, and you've done that consistently, that's when you start to experience a level of being fixed. And as in the beginning, we may do things just out of, you know, we have some faith in the books. And why do we have faith in the books? Because we see that the knowledge given here in the Bhagavad Gita, the knowledge given in the Srimad Bhagavatam, it's actually very practical. And if we're not able to apply these teachings in our life, then it means that we haven't really understood them. See, like it says here, therefore one who at the end of his life remembers Narayan attains the perfection of life. It's very simple like that. You just have to remember Krishna at the time of death. Everything's given here in these books. We can see how great devotees have applied these teachings of the Bhagavatam in their lives. Haridas Thakur, through his practice of chanting and humility, not wanting anything for himself, wanting to give everything to others, we can see in his life that some of the amazing things he was able to accomplish. Maya Devi herself came to distract him from his bhajan, and he was very undisturbed, just like Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita. Intelligence driven by desires drives the mind wild, but through meditation, knowledge, and the right association, we can bring the mind to its natural state of goodness, free from ignorance of identifying with the false ego. In such a state of mind, we can find happiness through pure consciousness of servitorship. So the keys are given there in the Gita. If our intelligence is driven by desires, then our mind will go crazy. So we have to learn to drive our intelligence through the teachings of Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. And that's why Haridas Thakur was able to maintain equilibrium. Later on, when he was going out preaching with Nityananda Mahaprabhu, sharing Krishna consciousness, he was beaten in, correct me if I'm wrong, 21 marketplaces? And he really had this attitude of, I want to give everything to all and not to accept anything for myself. And that's why when he was beaten, whipped almost to death, he actually didn't experience any pain at all, because Lord Chaitanya personally took that upon himself. And later on, when Haridas Thakur came to see Lord Chaitanya, Lord Chaitanya showed him his back, and all the whiplashes were there. So oftentimes, when we're talking about sharing Krishna consciousness, when we're talking about preaching, we talk about the many different types of atheists that are there. There may be philosophical atheists, those that, you know, have their PhD from Oxford or from Harvard University and profess that God doesn't exist. We have emotional atheists, which are very common. Those that, you know, say, why did bad things happen to good people? They're driven by their emotion. They've had some bad experiences in life, and that's where their distrust in Krishna comes. There's default atheists. It's people who just don't know any better. They're just born into a family, unfortunately, that had no faith in Krishna. So naturally, that's just their default position. But the kind of atheists I want to speak about, which Sutta Prabhu was telling me about yesterday, is the psychological atheist. It's the person that pretends to believe in God, pretends to believe in Krishna, pretends to believe in religion, and they just take advantage of the situation. You know, they may be a priest, they may be proud of whatever it is they're doing. The example is, you know, someone comes and sits down and says, oh, this is my Bhagavatam class, this is my kirtan, this is my service, it's all about me. And there's no Krishna to be found anywhere in that picture. So that psychological atheist, at least I can say for myself, is me. And I'm sure many of us experience the same thing, that we don't actually have full faith in Krishna. Back to that point, that if we had full faith in Krishna, then no matter what situation, what challenge happens, we accept that as Krishna's mercy. This is happening for a reason. I don't need to be disturbed. I don't need to be worried. I don't need to be anxious about anything, because Krishna is doing this for a reason. How can I learn? How can I improve my character? So, faith increases at every level and fully ripens when we reach Krishna Prema. Through philosophy, learning to see Krishna through our ears, not through our eyes. Oftentimes we want to see Krishna face to face. Oh, why can't I speak to Krishna? Why can't I see him? But we can see him through our ears. So the three things to remember to increase our faith are understanding the philosophy of Krishna consciousness and how to apply it in our lives. Association of devotees. There's one very interesting thing that Bhaktivinoda Thakur says in the Bhajana Rahasya. He says that even though chanting the holy name is the Yuga Dharma, it's the most important thing in our lives, association with devotees is even more important. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that if we chant Jai Shri Shri Radha Gokula Nanda Ki Jai, Shri Shri Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Ki Jai. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that if we chant, but we don't have any association with Krishna, with his devotees, if we don't read the books, then eventually we will stop chanting. But even if we don't chant at all, if we associate with the devotees, if we're reading Prabhupada's books, eventually we will understand, yes, I need to be chanting. So chanting comes from the association of the devotees, especially pure chanting. So there's many instances where Srila Prabhupada had many debates with various scientists about the existence of God, about where Krishna, proving the existence of Krishna. And he went through very elaborate ways of refuting the scientists. And in the end, he would just say, you know, Krishna is such a nice person. He's such a wonderful person. You could see Krishna's full faith, Srila Prabhupada's full faith in Krishna. Srila Prabhupada was someone that had experienced Krishna. In a way, you could say that his coming to the Western world wasn't really a challenge for him. Of course it was a challenge, but in a way he wasn't really going out of his way to do that, because he genuinely knew Krishna, he loved Krishna, and he just wanted to share that love with everyone else. Srila Prabhupada would say that all you have to do is chant Hare Krishna and be happy. That's all you have to do. And if you're not convinced about that, then we have all these wonderful books that you can read so that you can chant Hare Krishna and be happy. So it's very simple like that. So while we're chanting Hare Krishna, it is important that we chant in the right path. Sachinanda Maharaj often speaks about chanting with some Banda Gyan. It's important to know who we're chanting about. The Shishupanishad, verse 11, tells us, Vidyam cha vidyam cha yastad vedo bayam saha. The only one who can learn the process of nescience and that of transcendental knowledge side by side can transcend the influence of repeated birth and death and enjoy the full blessings of immortality. So Sambandha Gyan means knowledge of ourselves, who we truly are. We're the soul, we're the servant of Krishna. Who is Krishna? The Supreme Personality of Godhead, our Master. What's our relationship? We render service unto Krishna, and like that we can become happy. Why is that? Just from a mundane point of view, you'll find that through service others, through rendering service to others, you feel more happiness than by just serving yourself. And for those of you that serve prasadam, you'll notice this, that two different situations. One is you're really hungry and just run into the prasadam room and you get your plate, you fill it up to the top, and then you sit in the corner by yourself and you just eat. And that, you know, that's really wonderful. You'll experience a lot of happiness. A bit too much happiness sometimes if your plate is too big. But you'll find that you'll get even more happiness when, even though you're hungry, you serve prasadam to all the devotees. And oftentimes it's happened to me where it was a big feast. We've had a half day fast. You're really hungry. You really didn't want to serve prasadam, but you know your leader has told you to serve, and you're like, I really don't want to do this. But then you serve prasadam, and then you find that by the end of that service, you're not even hungry anymore. You're just completely satisfied that everyone's happily eaten and well fed. Like that. That's a practical example. And from a spiritual perspective, Krishna is the source of happiness. So by serving Krishna, then we can truly become happy like that. Now, it's very interesting that the Shishupanishad says that we need to understand both nescience and transcendental knowledge. Sometimes when we read the Bhagavatam, there's some pretty heavy statements. There's things that we think, why is this in the Bhagavatam? Why am I reading about the creation in the second canto? Why am I reading about the story of Puranjana? I think it's the fourth canto. Why am I reading all these stories about the material world? I don't really care about that. So we say that when we read the Bhagavatam, and then, of course, after hours, we're like, oh, I really need to focus on my material life, Prabhu. I need to get my career sorted. I need to get my relationship sorted. So we only say these things when we read the Bhagavatam. But the Bhagavatam has practical knowledge that we can apply to have successful careers, to have successful relationships. And what happens is when our material life is well, then our spiritual life can flourish. And that's one of the reasons why Krishna sends a devotee who hasn't finished reaching the level of perfection. In his next birth, he lets them take birth in a rich family, or even better, in a family of devotees. The reason is, if you don't have to worry about money, if you don't have to worry about these things, then you're able to be peaceful. The mind can be peaceful, and then you can focus on Krishna. So it's important to understand that. Now, there are eight other principles of Sambandha that Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains in the Dashamula Tattva. So the first thing he says, he says that if we understand these 10 principles, then our Krishna consciousness, our spiritual life will flourish. So the first principle is the Vedas are the principal scriptures of evidence, which in turn expound the following 9 principles. So if we understand that everything is here in Srila Prabhupada's books, then what that allows us to do is not waste time. And oftentimes, you'll see devotees, and including myself, will read some self-help books, we'll watch some videos of inspiring people. And what happens is, when you hear them talk, you're like, oh, actually, I think I read that in Prabhupada's books. I could have done that 10 years ago, but it's taken me this long to apply that. So the second point is Krishna is the supreme absolute truth. And even though it may just be a theoretical understanding right now, if we can have a little bit of faith that Krishna is genuinely taking care of us, then that will bring peace to mind. Let's just say that Krishna is not taking care of you. It's not true, but let's just say, even if we have that mindset that he is taking care of us, the mind will be peaceful. When the mind is peaceful, we're able to take advice from the intelligence, and then we're able to act normally in our lives. But then, of course, Krishna is taking care, so that's a bonus given there. Krishna is omnipotent. Number 4, he is the fountainhead of all relationships and love. Do I have 5 minutes? Okay. All right. Almost done. So another interesting thing that I heard yesterday in regards to this point is that we're all looking for friendships in our life. And we all have situations where there's people in control of us, whether it's our boss, our partner, our parents, whoever that is. And oftentimes, the friends that are truly close to us, they're not in a relation, in a position to help us. And they're not in control of the situation. And oftentimes, those that are in control of the situation are not your friends, right? They have other interests in mind. But Krishna is that one person that is truly our friend. And he's also in control of everything. So it's very convenient for us that we can have both of those things in our lives. The fifth point is the living entities are his separate parts and parcels. Number 6, the living entity, due to his constitutional position as the marginal energy, may come under the sway of material energy. Number 7, again, due to this marginal nature, the living entity in the liberated condition is free of the influence of material nature. Number 8, the living entity and everything in this material cosmos is simultaneously one and different from the Supreme Lord Krishna. So I think we could speak about this for another hour, but I'll let you research that in your own time. And reflect upon that. But then points 9 and 10 are the Abhideya and the Prayojana. Number 9, pure devotional service is the living entity's occupation and means. And number 10, pure love of Krishna is the living entity's ultimate goal. So, I'll end with this point, and then if there's any questions, that if we really want to have a loving relationship with Krishna, then we have to give love, right? If we want to have loving relationships with the devotees, then we have to give that love to the devotees. That's why Lord Chaitanya makes it very clear, amanina manadena, to the degree we want nothing to ourselves and give everything to others, to that degree we will get everything. It's funny how that works. The more we want something, the less we get it. And when we don't want it, that's when it comes to us. So the love you give pursues you. That's something my mentor always says. Jai Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Any questions, comments, corrections?